Hey, this is Stelly Efty.
And this is Heaton Cha.
And in today's episode, we're going to talk about how to go from 100 customers to 1,000.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yet. We want you to do your best.
And even more importantly, the most important things you need to focus on and zero in on when you just have broken out of the 100 customer milestone, right? What is the next phase of scale, of growth? Who do you need to focus on? Let's talk about that.
Awesome. Yeah, it's one of the most important parts in a company. I know like the early phases we've already talked about from like, what is it, 0 to 10, then 10 to 100?
Yes, we have two episodes on that, 0 to 10 and 10 to 100.
Yeah, so now we're talking about 100 to 1,000, and it's one of the most important parts because it really sets the foundation and establishes how your business scales in the future and what are all your levers. So on that note, I'm going to kick it off, if you don't mind. The big thesis that we have on this phase is that you have to start measuring your metrics, your KPIs, and start really understanding deeply kind of what's going on with the user base from a data metric standpoint. So these are your SaaS metrics from churn, lifetime value. If you're doing paid acquisition, or even if you're not doing paid acquisition, understand your customer acquisition costs, and then do those things by channel, as well as by any other piece of data that you have about your customers, whether it's company size that's important to you, or specific customer types like product people or marketing people or salespeople that might be using your product.
Yeah, I love that. So what we're saying is you break through the first 100 customers, you hit that milestone. Up until that point, I think, of course, you want to keep track of some basic numbers, right? You want to know your monthly recurring revenue. You want to monitor some of these numbers, but they're going to be probably pretty erratic. Up until you get to 100, your sample size is so small, and you've been probably around for a fairly short period of time, unless you are in the enterprise sales space, which then everything we're saying is irrelevant pretty much for you.
Yeah, pretty much. This is more a high volume SaaS.
Yeah,
that we're talking
SaaS,
about.
Exactly. But if you're in that space, up until you get to 100, you've been around for a very short period of time. You have a very small sample size. So these numbers are not going to be meaningful until you cross the 100 mark. But once you cross the 100 mark, now is the time to start investing in these things and really looking into them. And I think, so that's the first thing is like start looking at your KPIs and numbers, try to understand them really well and have them guide you in what needs to happen next for the next phase of your growth. But the other thing you said that I want to like highlight, because it's so, I think, profound and easy to overlook, is that once you're in the 100 to 1,000 phase, it's time to start not just looking at your numbers holistically, but start segmenting or creating cohorts, right? So start looking at groups of customers, either based on buying persona, based on industry, based on size of customer, based on country. There's many ways to slice and dice the data, but you want to group these together so that you don't get an average of your KPIs and numbers, but you get like a better idea of what different types of customers that you acquired from different types of channels, what the unit economics are for building your business around these type of customer types or segments or groupings of customers, right?
Yeah, and this is really critical. You might say I only have 100 customers. averages will work for me, and that's incorrect. Basically, even if you have two customers in a certain segment, just knowing what their unit economics look like from how many of them do you have, how much average revenue per customer are you getting per month, what's the churn on that customer base, if it is, a little more than two, obviously, can really help you determine where you focus your efforts to get to those 1,000 customers. Because you're going to want to know that, if there's a segment of customers, for example, in a certain geography, like let's say Canada, and the revenue per user is higher there, then that already informs what you need to do, which is you probably want to market to more companies in Canada of that sort of profile. And that's probably going to help you scale your revenue as well as scale to, 1,000 customers much faster, because you're focused on customers and segments that are really attractive for your business from a business metric standpoint. And this is one of the most critical things you can do. And the segmentation, as Stelly was saying, isn't just geography or just company size. It's really about what's relevant to your product and your business. So, you know, oftentimes, like if you look at, let's say, a project management app like Basecamp or even something like Asana, you'll basically quickly see that it's like a product that lots of users in a company should be using. And it's likely that segments of customers that have more employees using the product or more employees in their company are likely to have higher average revenue per user. And thus, they might be ones you want to spend a little extra time on and try to find more like that.
Yeah. So let's run through them real quick to make sure that we talk about, let's talk about the segmentation real quick. So there's obviously, you know, size of the customer, there is buying persona, who or usage, like which department, which team, which person bought this and is using it, use case. There is geography, like countries, where in the world are these people. You could probably, if you've experimented heavily, if you tried very distinct channels to cross the 100 customer mark, you could even look at channel, like which customers came through paid advertising versus content marketing or some other thing that you've done. If you have enough control over the data. Is there any other, like a cohort is another one, like in which month did we win these customers might be something. But if you're at 100, that's assuming you've not been around for years, that might also be a bit premature. Any other ways that people should think about like bucking up and segmenting and looking at their data?
Yeah, there is one, but I would say it comes a little bit later. And the one I really like to look at would be, and this is trickier, it's not like an off-the-shelf, you can do it in an analytics product or do it right in your, you know, using any kind of data that's the easiest to get to. But the more advanced versions of this look more like based on what they use the product for. Because oftentimes you've built, you know, with just 100 customers, it's not like you spent years building your product. You've spent a few months usually building your product, got to 100 customers, and not everyone's going to be using every part of the product. And so if you can slice by, you know, feature adoption, so like what features are they using the most, that is a very interesting slice that actually can inform not just kind of your marketing or your sales, but it can also inform your product development, especially when you take those slices against like the highly retained customers or the customers who are paying you the most. So the segmentation doesn't just have to be these sort of what I would call basic things that you mentioned. The next level of it would be much more advanced things that are more behavioral about, you know, what they're using the product for, what features they're using in the product, how much they're using the product, which is another segment, which is like, you know, we've found in a lot of the businesses we've analyzed that some customers use it daily, some customers use it weekly, and some customers use it monthly, and other customers don't use it at all. And depending on that, those are segments in themselves, right? If they're logging in every day, you could hypothesize that they're getting a ton of value from it, or they're having a lot of trouble with your product, right? But if you don't know those slices either, then what happens is all the other ones end up being how you inform your decisions on sales and marketing oftentimes. But then what do you do about your product? How do you inform decisions there? So that's another slice that I would say is definitely the next level, because it's not as easy to get as geography, which you can look at in most analytics tools.
Yeah, I love that. Let's step back on the KPIs that we need to look at, right? Obviously, there's a million different KPIs we could be tracking. And a lot of times, I think it's easy to get lost in that data. Not for everybody. Some people are really good at like cutting through the noise and know what to look at or how to uncover the meaning or create context around these numbers. But for bare bones, for somebody that's like, yeah, okay, we have 105 customers and we kind of hustle our ass off and we got a little lucky here and we don't quite yet have really a handle on a lot of things, especially on our data. We don't have like all the metrics ready and we want to start investing in looking at the core KPIs. How do I get started? What are the first few things I should be doing? Do I do this just by querying our database? Do I use some kind of a tool? Do I use a spreadsheet? Do I use a dashboard software? Do I track everything and study it? Or do I just track the core five things? What kind of advice would you give to a founder that's like at that stage where they're, we have a bunch of customers and we have a bunch of data, but we've never really like spent too much time looking into it and we want to get started? But it can feel a little overwhelming to know where to get started, what to focus on.
Great question. One that I'm sure both of us get pretty often at this stage of a business. Yeah. So I'm going to do a rare thing and actually give a tool recommendation today, just because it's free. I love free. Many people know that. And so there's a tool called ProfitWell.
Yeah.
And the reason I would recommend ProfitWell for getting your SaaS metrics understood and kind of in line. And these are metrics like your average revenue per user, your lifetime. They also have things like lifetime value, your churn rate, which is a really important one, the number of people that upgrade, number of people that downgrade, number of new customers coming in, how much they're paying. The reason I suggest that is these days, most SaaS businesses that are at the stage we're talking about 100 customers or so, they're using Stripe or they're using Braintree or they're using some of these billing systems that have made it really easy to just pick it up and within a day or less, like start charging people. And so ProfitWell integrates with a lot of those systems and just gives you this data off the shelf. And there are other tools out there like ChartMogul or Baremetrics, but those tools aren't free. So, you know, at this stage, you probably don't have a lot of capital and you probably want to use a free tool. So I would recommend ProfitWell just to hack the whole process instead of having to dig through your database and all that. But the key metrics are still the same, right? You want to know your average revenue per user. You want to know your monthly churn rate. You want to know your MRR, and you want to know how your MRR is broken down on a monthly basis by upgrades. So people who are already bought that are buying more. Downgrades, which would be people who are buying that are buying less. Cancellations, which is people who have bought that stop paying you. And then obviously new customers who have bought. Those are the four things that make up your MRR. And a tool like ProfitWell just basically gives you that out of the box on top of your billing system. So this is a critical piece. This is basic. Most people, when they're at 100 customers, they actually don't have a tool like this yet because they've been scrambling so hard just to get to those 100 customers tooth and nail, right? Like, do whatever you can on marketing, do whatever you can on sales, and just get to 100 customers. Because once you have 100 customers, you do have enough to start doing all the analysis and getting your metrics in line like we've been discussing.
Yeah. And if somebody listens to this and thinks, well, we do have all these numbers in place. We have 20 screens with massive dashboards in our office, but we don't have 100 customers. That could also point to like the priorities, not have been the right ones at the beginning, right? And we've talked about this many, many times in another episode, so I don't want to harp on it. But, you know, you need to do the right thing at the right time, right? You try to plant some trees in December when it's snowing somewhere. Doesn't matter how well you're planting these seeds, nothing might grow depending on what you're trying to grow. You have to do the right thing at the right time. So, you know, once you cross the 100, what we are saying now is the time to start looking at the data, investing in understanding the data better, and then trying to segment the data and understand where are the opportunities for us to go from 100 to 1,000 and beyond. Now, let's talk about, let's say you use a tool like ProfitWell, and you have a good understanding of the kind of the core metrics. You start digging a little bit into the data in terms of segmenting your customer base and understanding the unit economics of different groups. What do you do then, right? You can prioritize, use a model to prioritize where you see the most opportunity, where you get the most traction, where you think you should double down on and triple down on in terms of growth. But how do you go about it? Usually, I mean, obviously, there's a long list. You know, once you hit 100 customers, there's a lot of things you know you want to do with a product. It's very unusual that product development-wise, you don't already have a very long list of things people are telling you they need and want and that you want to do and get to, right? There's usually a lot of clarity or a long laundry list of things that you want to invest in when it comes to the product. Obviously, relating that laundry list to the customer segments you really want to double down on is a very smart idea, and aligning product and marketing and sales is a very smart idea. But for you to get from 100 to 1,000, you're probably going to invest heavily or start doubling and tripling down on marketing and sales. So how do you think about doing that? Maybe you touch on marketing, I'll touch on sales. For me, one thing that comes to mind for both things is that the 100 customer mark probably in many cases will lead to you having to start bringing in some more people in marketing and sales. Maybe up to 100 customers was just the founders doing everything, or maybe you had one person kind of as a quote unquote growth marketer or marketer, a generalist marketer, and you had one of the founders or one or two people doing sales. You had a very, very tiny team is what I'm saying for both sales and marketing. And from 100 to 1,000, you're probably going to want to maybe growing their team or investing those areas a bit more. How do you think about that? What do we do? Let's start maybe with marketing. As we've discovered these things, and let's say we prioritize them and we say we know which buckets and segments we really want to double down on for the next, 12 to 24 months. What does it usually mean for the marketing side of things? What are the things that teams typically have to do to be able to do that? And maybe if there's some, obvious mistakes or things that you've seen people get wrong, maybe we'll highlight those as well.
Yeah, I do agree that you have to invest in those things somehow. I don't necessarily agree that you have to hire people. I mean, I know sales might be a little different. In marketing, I actually would suggest try not to hire somebody, and for one very specific reason at this stage. And the reason is this: it's likely that whoever's on your team is the one that's been doing all the marketing to acquire customers. And it's also likely that they've been doing a lot of things that aren't necessarily creating processes or systems to enable you to actually scale. So at the point of 100 customers, the one question I would ask is, what have you done to get those customers? And I would then break down all the things that you've done to get those customers and figure out what actually has worked. One of the mistakes people make is they don't do that exercise, and they just think they can just either keep doing more of what they've been doing, which is generally okay, actually. And I'm a big believer in doing more of what you're already doing, even if you think it doesn't scale. But the most common scenario I see is, we're going to do these 5 or these 10 channels. And there's like a laundry list of them: PR, SEO, paid acquisition, Pinterest ads, whatever it is. There's a long list. And then you're just drowning in basically what I call a marketing shit list. And it's just a ton of these things that you think you can do, but you haven't validated that any of those are working and or will work for you. So one approach is you would start experimenting with new channels. And if you truly believe that whatever you're doing today isn't going to scale or you can't do more of it, which is rarely the case, but if you truly believe that, then you'd want to start running small experiments in those other areas. And ideally, you'd have the person that's already been doing it start doing that, whether they're a founder or somebody like that. And the reason for that is marketing generalists are much harder to find than marketing specialists. And so if you decide like there's a few channels that you want to experiment with, start running the experiments yourself, start really getting up to speed on how those channels work, because this isn't rocket science at all. And these days, it takes literally a day to get up to speed on any channel. And if someone's already been doing marketing, they can spend that day and figure that out. So that's the scenario where you need to find new channels and you start experimenting with them. I would not suggest hiring someone, but you can always ask people for advice or talk to people or pay for a course somewhere. Like the courses on digitalmarketer.com are pretty inexpensive and they can be helpful in helping you get up to speed with like Facebook ads or Google ads or something like that if you know nothing. And they're very good at that. But the thing I prefer before going that route, although that route is a good tool for you to have, is to actually look at what you've been doing and really break it down and try to understand your processes. And what I mean by that is that, let's say you have been blogging a lot and you're spending all of your time doing it. Start calculating how much time you're spending and what the process actually looks like for you, because it's likely that if customers are coming to you because of blogging and you've got to 100 from doing something like that, then you could probably get close to 1,000 just by doing more of that, as long as you make it more efficient over time and you create a process around it. And it's likely that you don't even know your customer acquisition cost yet, because you haven't been using paid channels, which are much easier to get the customer acquisition cost of than if a founder is writing blog posts, because you can't really calculate a founder's time necessarily. But I would force yourself to calculate it and really understand what that customer acquisition cost is right now and what the process is for it, because then you can start either spending money to help you do it and do more of it, or really know how much you want to dedicate to it and just do more of it. One of the things that I've found is that whoever's been doing marketing is also doing other things in the company. But if you've hit some level of product market fit, your churn's relatively low, and you're ready to scale the business to 1,000 customers, it's very likely that person should spend all their time on marketing, because they have all the knowledge. They've been doing it, and you should get them to create some processes, some systems, to be able to do marketing before you go hire someone to do it.
Yeah, this is so important. And one thing that I'll add to that before I jump in and focus a little bit on the sales side of things is that as you go from doing everything yourself and not necessarily constantly self-analyzing what you did and what the effect was and the cost was and all that and what the process was, as you start going from, all right, I've done, let's say I've blogged 100 times, it got us to 100 customers. Let's now, I don't know, let's bring in people to get more blog posts. Let's have other people write blog posts. Let's get some, you know, let's whatever, grow the amount of whatever content marketing we do. Either growing what you've already been doing, or you say, let's experiment with something we've never done. Let's start doing paid advertising. Let's start doing PR, whatever it is. Like either you do something new you've never done with and you run an experiment there, or you think, let's just do a lot more of what we've already been doing and involve other people to do that. Both things are brand new experiments. A lot of times we think because I've written 100 blog posts, I can just give somebody else that task. And that transition period is so crucial. And there's a lot of pitfalls that you can step into because you have never thought about the way that you've generated these posts, why they're successful, which ones are successful and which aren't, how much time it takes you, how you think about it, what the typical structure is. You don't understand why you were successful well enough a lot of times to be able to show somebody else or give somebody else the job in a way that allows them to replicate your success. And doing that is a new skill set, and it's something that you need to invest in and experiment with. A lot of people, they miss that step. They just go from, I have done blog posts that were successful. Let me just tell somebody else, write blog posts like this. And then by the time they look at the data again, all of a sudden the blog is not working anymore and the traffic has gone down. And they're like, what the hell happened? Right? Why isn't this working? It used to be working. Why isn't it working anymore? It was this middle step of really analyzing what worked and how it worked and getting good at giving this to others or doing this in a way that scales at the same quality. It's that step in the middle that can be super tricky.
Yeah, I fully agree. So sales. Let's say, yes. I'm assuming this is a scenario where you would say founders have been selling, correct?
Yes. Typically, first 100 customers, you'll have one of the founders or all of the founders hopefully been driving a lot of the efforts, even if it's not exclusively. They've been doing it mostly. Yeah, once you pass the 100 customers, you know, I've written about this before, so there's a blog post we'll link up in the show notes on how to the different hiring stages of a startup. I think once you pass the 100 mark, if the way that you acquire customers is heavily sales focused, if it's an outbound sale, or even if it's inbound sales, but if it's high touch, you're calling all your trials, you have multiple demos, you have multiple follow-ups, you spend a good amount of sales efforts, it's not super light touch. It's not an enterprise touch, but you spend a good amount on, you know, calls, let's say, to close a deal and close a customer. You're probably between 100 to 1,000. You're probably going to have to bring in some people just so you're able to increase the efforts. But the people that you want to bring in at that point, at that phase, 100 to 1,000, a lot of times startups will want to bring in senior sales leadership, like a VP of sales type, and have that person take over and build a team. And that's typically a very, very bad idea. It's premature. You're not there yet. That's maybe after 1,000 customers. But at the 100 to 1,000 customer stage, if you have a sales, if you are heavy on sales, what you want to do is you want to bring in a few junior people, junior talent, and you still, as a founder, you want to basically transition over from being, let's say, a shitty salesperson, right? Because a lot of founders think they're not great at sales, to now being a shitty sales manager. Right? Which means, you know, go from it was just the founder selling to you bring in 2, 3, 4 junior reps. And all you're trying to do again is you're trying to do two things. One, validate that you can teach somebody else to replicate the results you've been generating or similar results, and get a little bit more firepower to run new experiments, right? So in sales, just like in marketing, you might want to go out and try new experiments. You need to be in the middle of it as a founder. You need to get all the context of the data, all the context of the conversations. You can't just hire people and have them report to you once a week on what's going on in sales. You have to be in the trenches. So, but you will probably need to bring in some more firepower because it is very labor and time intensive, and it's going to not in many cases scale as beautifully as some of the marketing efforts might be. So you're going to want to bring in some junior talent, people that have the hustle, that have the sales talent, that have the competitiveness, that are culturally aligned, But people that didn't have a 5 or 10 year career in sales necessarily, so they're not like super sales pros. They come in there, they have all the hunger, all the energy, all the passion. You lock them in a room with one of the founders or yourself, and you show them what you've done and try to help them replicate the same results. And you run new experiments yourself. And once you get some little bit of success with a new experiment, you go instantly and try to see if you can get somebody else from those junior sales reps to do that as well.
Yeah, I love it. I really like what you said early on when you were talking, and I can't say it more or double down on it more, but you have to make sure that somebody that's in the company, somebody who's ideally a founder, is still spending a lot of time on that, like almost all their time basically on sales, just to make sure that it's aligned with what the company is doing and what it needs to be. It's too easy to think that you can hire someone and they're going to solve that sales problem for you. It's not exactly how it works at all.
Yeah, it's funny. Yesterday I had a lunch with somebody, and he had his three new kind of business development hires with him. He's the founder, and they launched a B2B product. They were in an end consumer space before, and they got like, I think, 5 or 10 customers really quickly through their personal network. And he was like asking me how to scale this and how to grow things. And there was a noticeable moment where he looked at me and he realized, based on the advice that I gave, which is very similar to what I just said, that they are not ready yet for him to be removed from the sales process. So he looked at me with a little bit of a disappointment and went, oh, so I'm probably going to have to stay working with these guys day in, day out. I can't just have them report to me once a week on what's going on the sales front. I'm like, yeah, no, you're not there yet. That's not the right time for you to go and fuck around with other things and let these three new people alone with all the challenges on the sales side. And he was like, all right, like this is the sobering feeling of this makes sense. Okay, dad. All right. I'll clean up my room. Like you had that like disappointment, but still like, yeah, this is probably the right thing to do. I got it. Yeah. So, all right. So I think it's tip time. Do we have any other tip to wrap the episode up on, terms of like 100 to 1,000 customers? What's the one thing you should do or absolutely shouldn't do?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to give it, I don't always give it this way, but I'm going to give it this way, which is, if it were my company, I'd talk to every single one of those 100 customers myself as the founder, CEO, whatever, and make sure I really understand why they're using the product, what they like about it, and what they want next from us. Because it's oftentimes easy to forget that they're your customers, they've signed up, they're paying you, and they matter more than anybody else because they're the ones that are going to help you figure out what the next 900 customers look like.
I love it. All right. So my tip is going to be less tactical, but here's more like of a founder emotional side of things. If you have crossed the 100 customer mark and you're on your way to 1,000, that's a pretty amazing accomplishment. It means that your chances of making this a success, it's not that you are successful and this is going to be working forever, but your chances are really good for the first time, right, in the company's history, that you're onto something and that this might become a real business and really create value for the long haul. You're going to have way too many things you want to do, way too many things your customers want you to do, way too many opportunities, way too many people reaching out, business partnerships, meetups to host, things to sponsor, things to do. People start going to notice you. There's going to be an overwhelming amount of shit on your plate, on yours and your team's plate. And it's easy to get overwhelmed or at times discouraged because you just don't have the resources. You're just way too few people, where you have still way too little money in the bank probably to do all the things you'd like to do in a perfect scenario. This is not a time to get overwhelmed. This is not a time to try too many things. Stay focused on what truly matters, which is your customers. Learn to deal with the noise and separate the noise, and just tell yourself at times when you're overwhelmed that, you know, you're on track to do something great. And just take it one day at a time and don't get frustrated or flustered or pulled in too many directions. Just keep calm, keep going, keep the course, and focus again on what matters, which is your customers, right? Focus on them, double down on that, and you're going to be fine.
Yeah, what's Telly said.
All right. With that, we're going to end the episode. It's not going to get better for me than Heaton saying what Stelly said. And we're going to hear you guys very, very soon.
Yeah. Bye.